to Gonkcast, an AwTekker podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And we're back after a short delay with another bonus episode about your emails. Plus, we'll continue working our way through the discography of AwTekker's mysterious side project, Gescom, by spending some time on AwTekker's Keynel remixes. If you want to hear us discuss Gescom's original Keynel EP, go back to our last episode. Thanks, by the way, for your patience. I moved to a new state last week. Actually, a lot of my stuff is still in boxes, which might be why you hear a bunch of echo in this like completely empty room. and I'm starting a new job right now, so we should be back on schedule at this point. But if we're a little late on an episode here and there, I hope you'll understand. On that note, though, our next proper episode coming 1 week from now will be on the next major chunk of Gescom's discography. Minidisc, ISSSA, A1 to D1, and Skull Snap. A week after that, we'll wrap things up with the Gescom remix EPs titled This and That. So, if you've got thoughts on any of these releases, send them in, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Okay, Dan, I know there's not much, but what do we know about the Keynel Remixes EP?
Yeah, the Keynel EP, not to be confused with the Keynel EP, came out November 25th, 1996. That's about 5 months after the Gescom original and 3 months before AwTekker's Chiastic Slide. Unlike Gescom's other releases, this EP was released by Warp, probably because the primary artist is actually AwTekker. In fact, the original promo copy openly calls it AwTekker's remixes of Gescom's Keynel EP, but the official release is a lot more cryptic. It just says conceived and secreted by Gescom, additional nurturing and care from AwTekker. On the other hand, the inside sleeve of the official release calls it Keynel Part 2. This inside area also features more artwork than the outer sleeve, which is credited to Moto, Yori, and OpenMind. And if you look real close, you'll find text that says, "If you got this far, you're a sad train spotter."
I love that. I should also mention that this release is pretty hard to find. It was reissued along with an MP3 version, no lossless, I'm afraid, by Warp in 2004, but that's no longer available. This might explain why it doesn't have a ton of ratings on Rate Your Music, though its average rating is one of the highest in Gescom's discography at a 3.51 out of 5. So we spent a lot of time discussing and gushing over the very distinct sound of the original Keynel EP last time. How would you describe the sound of this remix EP, and is it pretty different from the original to you?
I don't think it's like incredibly different. You know, it's definitely working with that same, sound palette, the same like ideas of the original. This one, to me, it feels like all the tracks are a little bit more stretched out. And I don't like necessarily mean that just in the runtime length. It just feels like, I don't know, like each little section like maybe breathes a little longer, and all. You know, it just like, you know, they're stretching their legs a little bit, taking their time with each one of these two remixes.
Yeah, I think like it has a strangely more like graceful kind of mellowness to it.
Yeah.
Like I feel like the original Keynel EP is like quite menacing, and I think we talked about like anxiety inducing in a weird way. I don't know, this one is like prettier. I think it's also got a cleaner, like a lot of empty space in the mix. I think it's just got like a nice clean sound. I'm tempted to almost call it like more electronic sounding than the first Keynel EP, which, you know, you remember, it's like so striking when you hear the original and hear like these kind of pure, you know, it sounds like recorded string samples and stuff like that, and kind of big clanging. Even like the machinery has like this kind of something in the room kind of a feel. This feels more like purely electronic music to me. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. Yeah, the original EP like has that sort of electroacoustic, you know, sort of feel to it. And this one's definitely more in the AwTekker realm. You know, it certainly feels more like an AwTekker release, I think. Maybe that's just, you know, because it says it on the cover, but it just feels like it definitely is like more electronic.
Yeah, you know, listener Joe wrote in to say, "One thing that I love so much about early AwTekker, and especially the Keynels, is how amazing distinct melodies are layered among each other, each usually capable of carrying a song on their own, but working perfectly all together without sounding discordant or busy. When listening to the Keynels at any point in the song, I almost forget which element came in when, because any element of the song sounds like it could be the main part that the rest of the track is constructed around. Now, we both kind of agreed with this when it came to the original EP, but I feel like this is almost the defining feature for me of the remix EP, is like how goddamn pretty it is. Like there's such a richness of melody here. Like on the first track, you know, it's quite a like simple arrangement. I mentioned all that empty space, and it's just like, it's very like simple. Everything's very clean. I feel like you can hear, you know, it's not like this dense blur that a lot of, say, Chiastic Slide is, right? But then, you know, you kind of like, what happens with the track is eventually the drums drop out and you hear like all these kind of strings and like, you know, just little like plucky, the plucky melody that's running through that thing and like different layers of it. You just hear how rich, actually, there's so much like melodic richness to it. And I agree with Joe that like each one could be the main hook. They're that good. And then I feel like I could gush for hours about the melodies on Keynel 2, you know, here, which is like, it's like these kind of plinking, like, it almost sounds like a harp composition or something. That's just how like pretty and graceful everything is. And then you get like these nice like string stabs in there. And then that one too sort of gives way to like a pure almost harp and string composition or something. I mean, I talked about Keynel, the original one, being so anxiety inducing. I mean, this is just like gorgeous. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. This one like definitely takes that anxiety out of it. It's so much like the second one, even to me, almost feels like a like an Aphex piece, you know, like with all that, you know, sort of pretty string kind of stuff that he does. You know, I guess Ottucker's not, you know, incredibly well known for doing, you know, the pretty kind of thing. But yeah, definitely, like it's really cool to see how the you know, essentially what's the same piece can be interpreted in like such different ways, you know, this like dense, you know, anxiety edition, you know, and then this calming, you know, chill out edition.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like to your point, I feel like I'm tempted to say that the second track here is the prettiest thing that Ottucker have ever made, right? Like it is so pretty that I'm like tempted to say, this like that might not be them, or like this might be one of the cases where actually they are collaborating and stuff. Because like honestly, can you think of like a prettier track than Keynel 2? Because I was gonna ask you, like, what is your favorite of the two tracks? And for me, it's like Keynel 2 is jaw-dropping. I can't believe how like beautifully composed it is.
I think I like the first one a little more. I definitely agree that the second one is like prettier and everything, but I guess maybe, you know, I'm not into the pretty music as
different
much,
things.
I guess. Yeah. So I do prefer the first one, but the second one is like definitely, I think, the you know, prettiest, most melodic kind of thing in their discography.
Because like, yeah, when I was listening to it at first, I was like, wow, this is like one of those stunners like Drain or, you know, Flutter or something. But then like the more I listened, I was like, this is actually way prettier than any of those. And like just the way that those kind of like harp type sounds, there's points where they start kind of echoing and it just makes like this lovely like cascade of notes. And it's all just, I mean, it's a lot denser track than the first one, but still everything is like very clean and like lovely. And, you know, on that point, I think I could say that that's probably my favorite here, but I too love the first track a lot. And like my favorite thing about it is that kick is like so just clean and distinct. Mm-hmm. Like it's a kick that feels good. It like feels really, really good to hear. And it's like a pretty, it's slow, but it's like a solid 4/4 kind of kick. And, you know, those kind of like ping pong little clacks that are like running through it. Everything is just so clean and crisp. And it just like, and then the plucks have like this kind of guttural, like kind of groaniness to them because they're like pretty low. And just everything on top of each other, it's like, it just makes a track that feels good in my gut.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that kick drum, like it's the nicest sounding kick drum in in a Ottucker song ever. It's like so weird. It's almost like, you know, I complain about, you know, bands like Fish and stuff where everything's just tuned, you know, so perfectly and stuff. But that kick drum, it is tuned so perfectly and everything, but it just works so well here.
I know. It's just like weird to remember how, you know, what was the thing you were talking about, like a cash register or something?
Oh, yeah.
Like for like the crazy like glitched out sounds on the first Keynel, all of a sudden everything is like just so clean and like lovely. Now, we've got to talk about the presentation, but first I wanted to read this cool but also kind of sad story from listener Joe, who writes, I first stumbled upon the Gescom Keynell EP in 2012, just browsing through YouTube, and the next year my best friend and I did a Boards of Canada-themed road trip along the Trans-Canada Highway. We stopped in some record store in Winnipeg, and I almost fell over when I found a 12-inch called Keynell by Autechre. When I realized this wasn't the EP I had been listening to, I was at first disappointed, but then I realized, wait, there's more Keynell I didn't know about? I couldn't wait to hear these mysterious tracks back home. Toward the end of the trip, we drove through the state my girlfriend of 3 years lived in and picked her up. She stayed at my place for 3 days, and we ended up breaking up at the end of it since I was moving to a different continent in a few months. I was an emotional wreck, so I went over to that same best friend's house, got extremely drunk, and then we remembered the Keynell 12-inch. Obviously, it doesn't sound better when you're shit-faced, but it made a very nice soundtrack to that overall moment and situation of feeling emotionally destroyed and empty and just floating into the abyss of whatever the universe has in store for you next. Joe also sent us some videos of the inside sleeve art on the EP. So what do you think about the look of this thing? We both thought it was pretty weird how minimal and like unassuming the original Keynell is. And this one is a lot cooler looking, except you actually have to dig to find the artwork, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's like inside the jacket, you know? Like Joe took a video and had to, you know, spread it open. Kind of, it's strange. I can't think of any other records I've seen that the you know, I've seen where there's just like a simple pattern or something inside, but never where what you would sort of assume would be the outside of the jacket is on the inside.
Yeah, it's just it's kind of cool, and it just kind of adds to like the weird hidden gem feeling of this record and of like Gescom in general. But you know, it's just so funny to think, so the original Keynell EP, and just, you know, it sounds and feels like a classic, but doesn't look like one at all. And then this one is kind of similar, and yet you look inside and you're like, oh, they actually did put some effort into like the whole presentation here. And it's just kind of a nice, I don't know, having your cake and eating it too moment. Joe also asked this question I think everyone asks themselves at some point. Why is Keynell two words on the Gescom EP, but one here?
I have no idea. I don't know what a Keynell is, whether it's one word or two.
Yeah, it strikes me as something they wouldn't do on accident. I think in doing research, like I've noticed that a lot of, you know, just fans and like reviewers and stuff, they seem to like kind of just accidentally switch between the two. Like they kind of forget there's a distinction. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Autechre did that. But I did find something. This doesn't really resolve that question at all, but I found somebody speculating. There's like an Urban Dictionary entry for the term like Keynell, which is like a British person, like basically saying like fucking hell, like Keynell, mate, you know, whatever, however that, you know, it's a bad impression. Yeah. But you know, like British people like really like slur and twist their slang into like something that us Americans can't like even recognize where it came from. But Keynell, like fucking hell. Do you think it's like a little joke? That would kind of be like them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that makes a little sense. I still don't know why, you know, they would put it from two words to one word or whatnot. But when you say it that way, I could see that.
Well, this kind of differentiating between the two titles kind of leads us to another big question, which listener Joe also brought up. Joe writes, it's easy to consider the Gescom EP the true one and the AE version the leftovers or bonus tracks, but that doesn't do them justice since they're so darn good and really just as accomplished as the Gescom versions. He says that if all six tracks had been released as a single album, it would have been a pretty amazing album. But I think it works best as two complementary releases, acknowledging that all the tracks are so long that it doesn't flow all that well when combined. He describes the remix EP as a satisfying release on its own, but asks, how did you guys end up enjoying listening to the overall Keynell project the most? So maybe a lot to unpack here, but does the remix EP feel like a satisfying whole to you? And do you have any temptation to combine both Keynells into one larger album, or are they just too different? You know, they do call it Keynell Part 2, after all.
You know, part of me makes me think, you know, some of the like earlier EPs when they were released on vinyl, there's, you know, you had to buy two parts to get the whole thing. It sort of like reminds me of that a little bit. I can't remember what the last one like that was, you know, in relation to the time period.
Yeah.
But I think they kind of work better separate. You know, all in all, you know, six tracks here are pretty similar. You know, they're pretty much using the same for lack of a better word, you know, stems and creating, you know, new songs from those, you know, same pieces and parts and all. So if you listen to all six, you know, in a row, it can get a little samey. Like, I don't think it would work well as a you know, an album. It's definitely, you know, an EP flair to it. And I think even it works best having, you know, four of them on the first set, and then these two extra ones, you know, as a remix set. I did try to listen to like all six, you know, in order or whatever, and I kind of felt that way. It kind of made the Keynote, you know, part two ones a little more underwhelming, because by that point I've heard the song, you know, four times. It was a lot more enjoyable, I think, to listen to them separately.
Yeah, I agree. I think the mood, as we talked about, is like so different between these two releases that they don't really belong together. I also think that the original Keynell is like such a satisfying, honestly, album length like journey that it feels weird to tack something onto the end and doesn't do justice to the remixes, which I do agree are like a very satisfying kind of piece as a whole. It's interesting how the structures of the tracks are like almost the exact same. Like basically it kind of gets going, and then you usually get a part where like everything drops out but the drums, and in both cases, like some kind of stuttery, glitchy, like vocal chop comes in. And then everything rejoins, and then for the end, like a very long outro on both of them, the drums then drop out and all of the like melodic elements sort of carry on. Like they both work the exact same way. The beats on both are actually like kind of similar in the way they're constructed. Like the first one has that kind of like scrape sound, and then the second one has something more like, it's like doing the same thing, but it's more of like a modem glitching or something, but it's still like just kind of a scrape in the middle of the beat. And you know, it just works as like two sides of a 12-inch or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even listening to them, you know, digitally back to back with no spacing, and we talk about this all the time on this show, but I feel like it would even be optimal to listen to it on vinyl, you know, where you play a side and then there's this built-in, you know, pause to it. I just think they, you know, because you're right, you know, they are like, They're definitely like different tracks, you know, but they are so similar that they would feel very tacked on, I think, if you just put them on the original Keynell.
Yeah, but it's like just enough as its own. I just, for the record, I think both are like fantastic. Like
they're
almost like equally good. Now, we got a bunch more emails on the original Keynell EP, so I think we can use that to start transitioning into the general email section now. You want to read the first one, Dan?
Yeah. Listener Jeff says, on the last episode, you discussed a speculation that Keynell might be AE alone. While there's no way to prove it, I do think this is the case. You mentioned the six versions, 1 through 4 on the EP, plus the two remixes, but in fact, there are 8 versions. The 6 above, plus an additional version, appears on Guestcom's This EP, where it is explicitly stated to be remixed by AE. Then there is yet another version that only appears on the Radio Mix CD put out by AE around Chiastic Slide. That version has no other official release, and it is totally unique. Given that 3 remixes are explicitly attributed to AE, and another appears on an AE-only release, I think it makes the most sense to believe that Keynell is just Booth and Brown.
Yeah, I'm super torn about this. Because weirdly, you know, I was listening back to both a lot, and I feel like the first Keynell EP sounds more like Autechre, but not the instrumentation, which is like kind of weird that it's like just so purely like strings and almost recorded sound. The second one, the sound palette is much more Autechre, but like the compositions, like I mentioned, are almost like so pretty that I like almost can't even see it as being Autechre. So like in both cases, I'm like tempted to say that somebody else is adding that other part. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because they really do feel kind of at the same time like very Autechre-esque, but then, you know, there's some portion of it that doesn't feel it. Like you said, like the melody and prettiness of the second EP. If just Autechre made the original Keynell,
Yeah.
Isn't it weird to them when you have a remix to explicitly say that these are by Attacker? That sort of makes me think that they didn't do the first ones. You know what I mean?
But like, see, I was thinking about this because it's like that. I agree with you, but then I'm like, that would actually be the perfect obfuscation to do that.
Yeah.
You know? To true. Act like, because it's so bizarre to say if it is them and they know it's them to be like, this is Attacker remixing Gescom. But like, doing that is, you know, it's like 3D chess.
yeah. That does definitely, you know, make some sense. And I could see them doing it. You know, it's sort of a cheeky thing, like the Brits would say.
Yeah.
So I could see it, but it is just kind of strange. It's like, you know, covering your own song or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It is sort of compelling though, what Jeff brings up, that there are like four Keynells which are kind of like explicitly credited to AE. That's like a lot of this project, even though like some of them are harder to find. But I don't know. God damn, it just like really like rattles my brain when I try to think about this. I wanted to read this rather long message from listener Cameron because it really makes me happy. Cameron writes, "Hi guys, just wanted to drop you a line about the last Gescom episode and thank you really for this project you've embarked on to cover all things Attacker. I've been a fan since my late teens. I'm nearly 40 now and thought I was pretty knowledgeable, but through this podcast and community, I've discovered all sorts of little tidbits, offshoots, and hidden gems that have greatly increased my appreciation for Booth and Brown's work. To name the most recent example, I can't say how much I appreciate the dive into Keynell. I listened to a handful of Gescom tracks back in the early 2000s and I mostly bounced off it, but Keynell was a release that I just plain missed, and after hearing the discussion in last week's podcast, I finally gave it a spin and was completely blown away. It's a fully fledged album with a statement and purpose, and as you both pointed out, it is a near seamless conceptual and tonal transition from Try Repete to Chiastic Slide, which is my personal favorite AE record. Sickly is one of my most beloved Attacker tracks. Its emotional weight, melancholic melody, and grinding steady beat have always been so stunning, and how Booth and Brown can convey human warmth, meaning, and feeling with such inhuman soundscapes. And Keynell, especially 4, really shows them working in that same rich sonic and thematic vein. The track's melody is deceptively simple, but it's incredibly evocative. It sounds robotic and processed, but it's so pure, so honest and alive that it can't help but convey human feelings of longing and loneliness, but also determination and grit." I feel like this is like the whole reason why we wanted to do this podcast. Like, if we can get anybody to like check something out they didn't know before, to like find a new appreciation for something and like so much for, like, that's badass, right?
Yeah, definitely. The Attacker community at large is a pretty rad place, you know. I've yet to have anyone be a dick to us or anything, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, we actually just got a similar email from listener Tyler, which I slipped into our outline at the last second. You want to read that one, Dan?
All right. Tyler says he skipped over Gescom until hearing our episode and explains that Keynell caught him by surprise. He writes, "What an amazing record. I've been missing out. It was incredibly striking to me how similar it sounds to Chiastic Slide. For this reason, I find myself feeling convinced that Keynell is just Booth and Brown, not just because it's easily the best of the Gescom releases discussed so far, but because of its resemblance to Chiastic. The crunchy, bit-crushed beats throughout the record feel like they belong on that album. This is especially true on Keynell 2. There's a heavy beat that drops in around the 33-second mark that persists through most of the track that includes a double kick and then some kind of sharp sound like a trash can lid. That beat actually sounds like a slowed-down version of the beat in a Calbrook. As the track goes on, the string melodies remind me of the ambient endings to tracks like Sickly and Pule. I agree with one of the listeners from the podcast who cited Keynell as the missing link between Try Repete and Chiastic Slide."
Now, I agree with that about Calbrook, actually. I hadn't thought of that before. But on the topic of Sickly, listener Joe also wrote in to say, "I understand why people compare Keynell 4 to Sickly, but I hate when people take the step of calling Keynell 4 an early version as if it's the lesser of the two. I totally understand liking Sickly better than Keynell 4, and I think both are amazing tracks, but just because they wrote Keynell 4 probably first and then used a similar melody on Sickly doesn't mean it's inferior." Did you get a chance to like sort of revisit these two side by side? And did you? I mean, they're pretty similar.
Yeah, I didn't like notice that. It had been so long since the Chiastic Slide. That's one reason I'm glad with the emails and stuff. People always point out things like this that would fly by me. I listened to them back to back, and it is like strikingly similar. I could see. I agree with Joe. It doesn't mean that it's inferior and stuff because it's the, you know, maybe early version. I definitely see it as maybe like the gestation of an idea or, you know, an early sketch or something, but it doesn't mean it's not, you know, a fully fledged, you know, worthwhile track on its own.
Yeah, it's just like that kind of plucky melody seems to be almost reused on Sickly, but it's like sort of in a different configuration and it seems like much faster. And it's actually so fast. This is like kind of what I love about Sickly. It's like so fast that your attention drifts away from it. Like it doesn't almost, you almost don't realize how pretty that is. And you kind of like end up focusing on the other stuff, like the textural elements of the track, like the weird bit crushed, you know, like mess that's going on. And it kind of makes it like, and also there's like some really cool droning, like lows on Sickly. Mm-hmm. It's just like a totally different use, I think, of a similar thing. And honestly, if I think about it, it's like, I would almost call Keynel 4 like an interesting like distillation of like the prettiness of this idea. And then Sickly is like just like kind of a different beast entirely. It's almost like Keynel 4 is like the acoustic version. And then, you know, Sickly is like the full rock band version. And like one of those rare cases where both are really good, like a Nirvana Unplugged situation or something.
Yeah, that's actually a really good analogy. It's like the same, you know, sort of song, but done in like a tonally different way. You know, very much like, you know, an acoustic and a full band sort of thing. Yeah, that's perfect.
Well, I should also note that listener Joe wrote in to say that it made my day that you guys loved Keynel as much as you did, as I've shockingly gotten some mixed reactions from certain other people I've recommended it to. It really is a hidden masterpiece. And listener Ella shared mostly first impressions on all the Guestcom releases we've discussed so far. Ella calls EP1 a very good start for Guestcom. EP2, by far one of the most plain releases from Sean and Rob. I think we both agree.
Yeah.
Sounds of Machines, proof that even Sean and Rob's more obscure outings have something to offer. And Keynel, quote, my personal favorite and the one I have the most experience with. It's a fascinating insight into what Sean and Rob were doing between Tri-Rep and Chiastic, marking a move into sampled bit crush percussion. Overall, an absolute highlight of Guestcom. Hear, hear. Totally agree. Now, Ella also writes, I have a theory about the Motor EP. What if it really was made in 1994, but for whatever reason, they decided not to release it until 1996? The sound of the EP certainly seems possible in 1994, and it feels strange that the year would be mistyped like that, but maybe it's just a genuine mistake, and I'm thinking way too much into it. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, I definitely think it's possible. I'm not 100% how like copywriting stuff works, but I think you would copyright it from like when it was made, like just knowing like the Bob Dylan like releases, they always have to release stuff before it's 50 years old, even though it's never been released, and so it's, you know, copyrighted like from whenever, so it seems true, but also I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I don't, there's just something so weird about the Motor EP where it's just like, I could kind of believe that, but it would still be,
it's still strange. Like, yeah,
it would still be outdated in 1994, I think. And honestly, it being from 1996 makes more sense than it being from 1994, because there would be like a little bit more distance to then do like a retro thing. It's just, I don't know, I feel like it's just like, as a side note, this is a key part of all like truly great artists, is that whenever they make something that sucks, like there, you feel like there has to be some explanation, like they did it on purpose or like something, you know what I mean?
It's the old, you know, back to Bob Dylan, you know, self-portrait thing, like, oh, he made a shitty record on purpose. Yeah, and stuff. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. I like that.
All right, what's next?
All right, another comment from listener Joe. He says, AE have mentioned how Amber was something they felt pressured to write for Warp, while Chiastic Slide was finally the album that they had always wanted to make. I have to wonder whether they decided to dip their toes into these new waters by creating Keynel for Scam to see how it would work and how it would go over. Then, when Warp agreed to release the Keynel remix, that was sort of a green light to continue with this new style. I don't want to in any way promote the idea of the Keynels being merely a demo, but I think it's a major turning point in their career that is often overlooked in terms of its significance.
Yeah, you know, I think I know what interview Joe is referencing, and I feel like I remember it a little differently. They're like, I feel like they said something more like they were doing the artificial intelligence thing, and then they put out Tri-Rep, which they felt was like kind of weird, and they were surprised how enthusiastic Warp is about it, and that gave them courage to like go fully weird on Chiastic Slide. You know, not necessarily like dissing the stuff that came before Chiastic Slide, or even saying Chiastic Slide was like their first true album or something. But I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of tempted to say that weirdly, Guestcom in general, and like Keynell as an example, is like kind of more conservative than Autechre's normal output. You know, it's like how often does that happen where like an artist's side project is like the coloring and the lines thing?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It definitely is. I mean, we talked about it in our last episode, you know, especially like EP 1 and 2, you know, they sort of felt like odes to, you know, the techno and electronic music of the past, like the sort of, I don't mean this in a negative way, but the simpler, you know, kind of stuff. While as, you know, Autechre, even I think from Incunabula on, is a bit more out there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true that like on Keynote, I think they are working out some ideas, especially with those like kind of weird bit crushed sounds like in the percussion that appeared on Chiastic. But yeah, it just feels like in general, Guestcom is like more conservative than their traditional output. I guess if you're like Autechre, it would have to be that way. Like, how could you get even weirder on your like? Imagine somebody said to you like, hey, if you think Confield is weird, wait till you hear Guestcom. You'd be like, what could that even mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like at that point it would just have to become, you know, a noise project or something, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Something that would be you know, more dismissible.
All right, what's next?
All right, listener Joe wrote in to say, is it just me or is the vocal effect used on the A side of the AE remix the same exact one Boards of Canada used a few years later on Telephasic Workshop? And listener Tyler took the same question a step further, writing, do you think Boards of Canada might have contributed to Keynell? We know that Boards of Canada got their start on Scam on Booth's recommendation, and their debut EP High Scores was released in the same year and on the same label as Keynell. The reason I started thinking about this is because the heavily chopped vocal samples on several of the Keynell tracks bear resemblance to the vocal sample style on Negalox. I don't know. It's probably a stretch. Maybe it just stems from a deep desire to hear a collaboration between these two.
So when I first read this, I thought, that is some wishful thinking. But then the more I thought about it, I was thinking like, okay, for it would be weird if they were like, if they like called up, you know, Boards of Canada and were like, we just can't make chopped up vocals. Like, could you come in and do, you know what I mean? Like, that's their contribution is like something that I think any of these guys could do. But then, you know, I realized it suddenly dawned on me, like this whole time I've been thinking, you know, the Keynell 2 on the remix EP is too pretty for Autechre to make. And I'm almost like feeling tempted to say, what if Boards of Canada actually did contribute? It's kind of compelling what Tyler has laid out here.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly compelling. It just, I feel like, you know, that's the holy grail of the, you know, IDM, you know, collaborations. It would be sort of funny if it was just this secret thing that nobody knows about. I mean, I can see it, you know, but I don't know, you know, I've got no insight to it.
I know it feels impossible, but I'm like, it's so tempting and actually it's so plausible that I'm like, for me, it's like headcanon now. I'm just going to say that they did.
Okay.
Like, that's what I'm going to believe. All right. Here's a great email from listener Torin, who found a radio interview where Sean clarifies that LSEC is pronounced LSEC. No further explanation, of course, but it occurs to me the L is the 12th letter of the alphabet, and LSEC, or LSEC, is the band's 12th record. So, also, didn't LSEC follow L Event? Can't wait for the overthinks on this one. This pronunciation thing also reminds me to ask, what the fuck is up with you guys calling Blade Aloris Blade Aloris? Did I miss something here? It has always struck me as one of the few immediately intelligible track titles, Blade Lores, the lores, the myths, the legends of the blade. Maybe a Blade Runner reference, or maybe Highlander, some shit like that. Not this Portuguese Blade Aloris or whatever y'all came up with. So, first off, what do you make of LSEC?
I think I've heard that interview, actually, and I don't know. It just sounds wrong. I mean, I know it's the man who made it, so he's right, but It's like you know, the guy who invented GIFs. He says it's pronounced GIF,
right,
and he's wrong because it's GIF. so I think Sean here is also wrong. It's LSEC.
I it's too late for me to change like how I pronounce this.
It's never, stuck in my head. Yeah.
But that would kind of like strongly imply that it's that the word is coming from sequence, mm-hmm. you know, which would yeah. be a very Autechre thing to do. And if L, I don't know if that's a stretch, but like the 12th letter of the alphabet, it would be like 12th album sequences, you know, that would kind of like make sense as a name and like be a very Autechre thing to do. And on that note, very similar to how I interpret this track, Blade of Loris, Blade Loris, however you want to call it. I do kind of subscribe. We had a listener write in and say that they think it's like low res is the end of that, like a low res
oh,
filter.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that, but it feels weird to say Blade Low Res. Like, that just doesn't roll off the tongue. So I added a little Portuguese, like, Blade of Low Res, basically, is what I'm saying. Like, you know, on one hand, it's just sort of like the first thing that comes to my mind is, like, usually the way I'm going to call it for the rest of my life. But I feel like there's some merit in the way that I'm pronouncing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I only pronounce it that way because you do, and I assumed you knew what you were talking about. Because I didn't have wrong. Yeah, I didn't have any clue. Yeah, I do sort of think it means low res more than lores. Because isn't it normally lore? Like you would say, you know, it's
yeah.
It's not normally like pluralized.
I don't think there's a plural. Yeah, it's not like a real
yeah,
word.
Yeah, I'm not lores. Sure. But so, yeah, I think it's blade low res doesn't roll off the tongue. So I'm going to give it to you on this one.
Yeah, I'm just twisting blade low res into Blade of Loris. That just feels nice to say.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
Yeah, Torin also shared part of an interview where the guys are asked, a lot of your titles have the word casual in them. What's that all about? Rob says, just catalog shelf stuff like specimen books all have different subcategories and sub-subcategories and sub-sub-subcategories and then feels and flavors that seem to exhibit similar traits. Maybe they're just traits easy for us to earmark with a bit more color than a file name. Sean adds, they're more like file names. It's fucking real difficult to explain exactly what we mean by them, we know. If Rob says, I've got some more casuals here, do you want them? I'll know exactly what he means, but I can't put it into words what it is. Rob notes that they have a bunch of these, like idols, casuals, heavies, etc., and the interviewer compares them to tags. Sean then says, tags is good, like little tags you might have on a YouTube video.
Yeah, I feel like we maybe referenced this interview before, actually, but I just want to point out how annoying Sean and Rob are. Like, basically the interviewer is like, what does casual mean? And their response is, it's a word that means something. That's literally what they said in response. And it's like, okay, I get what they're saying, like in general, like these are like sort of folders or tags or something, but like, could you, and you don't have to explain everything, but could you just say, for example, casual is a track that is like blank, you know?
I get that they probably don't want everyone to know, and I think I understand it. You know, it's sort of like an inside joke sort of thing, you know, with yeah. friends. It probably, you know, a lot of times, like when you have those little inside jokes, you try to explain it to a third party, and then it's like yeah. not actually funny and doesn't make any sense at all. And it can even sort of like feel a little embarrassing, maybe even at that point.
Right.
And so I get not wanting to explain it because maybe it is like some stupid joke, you know, like it may be a joke that only they two and maybe some of their friends or something would get. And then to explain it, it would just sound, you know, real stupid and maybe even, you know, seem to bring it down or something. So I understand like wanting to keep it
yeah,
you know, a bit under the vest. And I think the way he I get that he didn't actually say what casual means, but I think to like you know, clarify that it's essentially a tag is all that like yeah. we need to know.
Yeah, it might even literally mean like, you know, something a filthy casual would like, and it was just an inside joke.
Yeah, exactly. And see, like, if you explain
cringy
that
to explain,
yeah, if you explain that, you're gonna look like a dickhead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, I just wish they would, like, because, you know, every Autechre fan does this where you like put them all together and you can't, like, you're like, what?
Yeah, what's like, that missing link?
What is the thing? I don't even hear why these would all be casuals, you know what I mean? And like, I wish they would just give like one like, for example, this is how this one works, and then I would be like, okay, I get it. But they're never going to do that for us.
Yeah.
They're dicks. All right. Torin also recommended that we cover Eamon Tobin, once we're done with the Autechre discography. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right. I feel like I've never even said that.
Yeah, I've only ever read it, yeah.
adding, more than many artists that listeners have so far suggested, his career has been one of constant progressive evolution, resulting in an incredible discography that keeps on giving. On that note, listener Andrew wrote in to recommend Aphex Twin, Earth, adding, while Dylan Carlson isn't nearly as prolific as Autechre and his music is less diverse, I'd love to hear you talk about a totally different genre, and his top choice, Nick Cave. Andrew writes, there's so much to discuss, from his wild early years in Berlin to the wonderful Red Hand Files project. And the best thing about Nick and his band, they just keep getting better and better. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts about these, but I was thinking, it's been kind of surprising to see so many listeners recommend Earth, honestly. Is there like more crossover between AE fans and Earth fans than like might, you know, seem obvious? Like, why?
Yeah, I don't know. It is sort of strange. I personally love Earth and love Autechre, so you know that is kind of weird. But I didn't really think. I guess maybe it's you probably can appreciate experimental music if you like Autechre.
Yeah.
And then you know you probably can appreciate Drone to some extent and whatnot. But yeah, I mean the later Earth stuff that gets a little more spaghetti westerny is different than Autechre, I think. So it is sort of strange, but I do like that suggestion.
Yeah, and you know, for some reason, like Nick Cave feels like his discography is just overwhelming. It terrifies me. The idea of going all the way through that.
Yeah, I also love Nick Cave, but I feel like there's definitely already a Nick Cave podcast.
Possibly, yeah. I hesitate to like jump to a completely different genre because I want to find something that all the like cool people that have been listening to this podcast will like as well. Like I'm looking for that other thing that all Autechre fans will be into. I feel like we've got some ideas, but we do appreciate the suggestions. I also want to note that listener Steve wrote, I was interested to learn that Daryl Fitton contributed to Guestcom, but I can really hear it. I think you may find that everything you were gushing about on the first Guestcom EP is actually his style from the time, as opposed to Autechre's. The comment you made about them referring to Five as their favorite Guestcom track makes even more sense if that was a track someone else did or someone else did most of it. They don't strike me as the kind to toot their own horn. If you haven't checked out Bola, I suggest you start with the first album, Soup. It has For Casa 3 on it, which was the highlight from their first 12-inch on Scam. I listen to this album a lot to center me when I've had a rough day or sometimes to fall asleep. Kind of just wanted to put that out there for other listeners who dig EP1 as much as I do, but I did check out Soup a little bit. I got to say, it does sound great. It sounds like really rich in the way that the first Guestcom EP, those last three tracks, do. So I'm excited to listen to more, but what's next?
All right. Lastly, listener Steve also shared a bunch of promotional emails he got from record stores years ago. For example, a 1997 listening for the Motor EP reads, managed to get a few copies of this highly sought after 12-inch. Very limited supplies, and this is not reorderable. Act quickly to avoid disappointment and possible depression. I like that. And a 2001 listing for Keynell reads, first CD issue of the third in Scams series of Guestcom EPs. Guestcom's Heyday, a sparkling foray into down-tempo found object music concrete passages. Keynell 1 with its unbelievably funky cello pizzicato line. We determined we don't know how to say that word last episode.
I don't know how to say it.
Keynell 2 with its slower than slow mechanics and that lovely Anvil Vapor era synth line bursting into the most ridiculous nonsensical DSP freakout polyrhythm. Keynell 3 with that strange falling metal sound that never lets you down. Keynell 4 with those perfect synth horn melodies and counterlines and those lovely metallic crunching sounds. Hasn't aged a bit. Still miles ahead of the folks who have had 4 years to catch up. Lethal.
Yeah, did you get a chance to skim through some of these emails? They're pretty cool.
No, I didn't see them until reading this, so I will go look at them tonight because that's interesting.
Yeah, I think we'll continue to reference these because there are some from the Guestcom releases we haven't talked about yet and actually shared a bunch from like some of Autechre's main albums and stuff as well. But just stuff you received. I mean, I just find it like so interesting because one, it just sort of speaks to like the weird, you know, sort of like underground quality of Guestcom where, you know, there's like this kind of like a lot of these messages mention like super hard to find. Like I managed to like, you know, in some British warehouse, I managed to find a couple of these and like get them while you can, you know, like, and lots of mention of like, you know, just the weird, you know, this is probably true of like all collectors, but just like the bubble wrap is intact and all this stuff like that. It just got like a cool, like kind of underground trading network thing, which I think is exactly what they were going for on these early Guestcom releases in particular, but also really funny, like how, I don't know what it speaks to, like how obscure kind of Guestcom is, like how hard this dude is selling Kinel. You know what I mean? It's like, I understand you probably have not heard this, but like, seriously, it's very good. And he's like doing an amazing job, like selling it. But it's just funny that he has to sell it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe this is like one of those sort of, you know, grass is greener sort of things, but it's nice. Like today, how you can hear any of this very easily. There is like a certain, you know, fantasy in, you know, having to hunt it down and you know, find it from these obscure warehouses and stuff, you know, that does seem like kind of cool and a bit of a lost, you know, art these days.
Yeah. And probably even like sort of a lost art as the 90s went on, and like part of why I think Autechre likes doing Guestcom stuff sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Napster started like 98 or 99. So yeah, definitely.
Well, I just want to note that there were a bunch more emails that we couldn't fit into this episode. I guess that's what happens when you take 2 weeks off, but I'm saving them for next time, so fear not. And that's everything.
All right. Well, if you've got any Autechre opinions or hot takes you want to share, we want to hear them. GonkCastPod@gmail.com. Next episode in a week, the later Guestcom stuff. Again, send us your thoughts, GonkCastPod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube. Stay connected on Twitter and Instagram. Those are both @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.